Today, what the Fed, higher for longer as they wait for more data, still. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analysis, where the latest post covering finance and property news. Well, on Wednesday, we got the FOMC decision and the Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell's roughly 50-minute press conference, but frankly, it was hardly worth the watch. As he said, price growth will likely resume cooling this year, but avoided offering a timeline for rate cuts. It seems the burst of inflation seen in the first quarter has reduced policymakers' confidence that price pressures are actually ebbing.
The economy has made considerable progress toward our dual mandate objectives. Inflation has eased substantially over the past year, while the labor market has remained strong. And that's very good news. But inflation is still too high. Further progress in bringing it down is not assured, and the path forward is uncertain. We are fully committed to returning inflation to our 2% goal. Restoring price stability is essential to achieve a sustainably strong labor market that benefits all. Today, the FOMC decided to leave our policy interest rate unchanged and to continue to reduce our securities holdings, though at a slower pace. Our restrictive stance of monetary policy has been putting downward pressure on economic activity and inflation, and the risks to achieving our employment and inflation goals have moved toward better balance over the past year. However, in recent months, inflation has shown a lack of further progress toward our 2% objective, and we remain highly attentive to inflation risks.
The central bank's preferred gauge, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, rose 2.7% in March from a year earlier. That was compared with a 2.5% advance in January. And policymakers explicitly acknowledged that by adding a line to their post-meeting policy statement, noting that the lack of further progress towards their inflation goal in recent months.
Inflation has eased notably over the past year, but remains above our longer-run goal of 2%. Total PCE prices rose 2.7% over the 12 months ending in March. Excluding the volatile food and energy categories, core PCE prices rose 2.8%. The inflation data received so far this year have been higher than expected. Although some measures of short-term inflation expectations have increased in recent months, longer-term inflation expectations appear to remain well anchored, as reflected in a broad range of surveys of households, businesses, and forecasters, as well as measures from financial markets.
Powell's remarks reflected a broader shift in thinking at the Fed towards holding borrowing costs at a two-decade high for longer. That change in tune, which was first voiced just last month, represented the culmination of several months of firm increases in inflation, hiring, consumer spending, that has also led investors to pare back bets from roughly six cuts this year to just one if you're lucky. I don't know how long it'll take, Powell said, of when he and his colleagues might have the confidence to cut rates.
We've stated that we do not expect that it will be appropriate to reduce the target range for the federal funds rate until we have gained greater confidence that inflation is moving sustainably toward 2%. So far this year, the data have not given us that greater confidence. In particular, and as I noted earlier, readings on inflation have come in above expectations. It is likely that gaining such greater confidence will take longer than previously expected. We are prepared to maintain the current target range for the federal funds rate for as long as appropriate. We're also prepared to respond to an unexpected weakening in the labor market. We know that reducing policy restraint too soon or too much could result in a reversal of the progress we've seen on inflation. At the same time, reducing policy restraint too late or too little could unduly weaken economic activity and employment. In considering any adjustments to the target range for the federal funds rate, the committee will carefully assess incoming data, the evolving outlook, and the balance of risks. Policy is well positioned to deal with the risks and uncertainties that we face in pursuing both sides of our dual mandate. We will continue to make decisions meeting by meeting.
I can just say that when we get that confidence, then rate cuts will be in scope. And I don't know exactly when that will be. Powell's comments soothed investors' fears that the central bank leader might more forcibly lean against rate cuts this year, or even flag a potential hike. Treasury yields slid and stocks briefly rallied during the press conference, moves that were particularly notable after Powell said rate hikes were unlikely. And the Fed chief also established a high bar for further rate hikes, saying it's unlikely that the next policy move will be a rate increase. Officials would need to see persuasive evidence that policy isn't sufficiently restrictive to bring inflation down to the 2% target to consider raising rates again, Powell added. Officials also announced plans to slow the pace at which they're rolling maturing assets off their balance sheet. Beginning in June, the cap on Treasury runoffs will fall to $25 billion per month from $60 billion, while the cap on mortgage-backed securities will remain at $35 billion. With principal payments of agency securities currently running at about $15 billion per month, the total monthly portfolio runoff will be about $40 billion, Powell said. This was seen by Powell, by the way, as a separate issue to getting inflation back to 2%. And note, 2% is still the target. Journalists pushed Powell on the question of whether the still strong economic growth and robust hiring signals that the Fed's policy is actually not restrictive enough, or whether other factors are actually keeping inflation above the 2% target. But he pushed back against that idea on Wednesday. I do think the evidence shows pretty clearly that policy is restrictive and is weighing on demand, Powell said. We believe over time it will be sufficiently restrictive. When the decision was released ahead of the press conference, for a brief period, US stocks did move higher. That's the biggest rally post-policy meeting since December. And Treasury yields tumbled more than 10 basis points across the maturities. But that relief trade kicked in mostly when Powell told reporters it was unlikely that the next move would be a hike. But the problem is, of course, Powell didn't explicitly signal a rate cut was coming this year and said it will probably take longer for central bankers to gain enough confidence in the downward trajectory of inflation to consider easing policy. That reality check then triggered an abrupt reversal in equities, which ended lower on the day. And Treasury yields trimmed some of their decline, with the policy-sensitive two-year holding just below the 5% threshold, but not by very much. The fact that the market reacted at all to the idea that rate hikes are likely off the table shows just how much sentiment has indeed shifted from the start of the year, when the consensus called for multiple rate cuts and an expected steady downtrend in inflation. Forecasts for higher interest rates were few and far between back then. And a sell-off in equities and bonds during April that drove two-year Treasury yields back over 5% and sent the S&P 500 index down to its worst monthly loss since October illustrates the tension that was building up ahead of this week's Federal Open Market Committee meeting. And potentially pivotal data is still on deck. The April jobs report is out on Friday, and that's forecast to show robust jobs growth once again, while more inflation reports are due in coming weeks. Central banks, of course, will need to weigh it all up because they are, quote, data dependent. One important question, given the Fed's watch and wait approach, is will the ECB or the Bank of England cut first? This was actually discussed in the press conference.
It seems that over the past 3 or 4 years, economies and central banks in developed markets at least have been on more or less the same trajectory, easing during the pandemic, fighting inflation with restrictive policy on the way out. Feels like that may be ending in 2024 based on some of the economic data from Europe and the US and Japan and statements from those central banks as well. So my question is, what considerations or risks does a period of more divergent global economic trajectories and central bank policies present for the FOMC?
So you're right. I think that may happen. And I know that we all serve domestic mandates, right? So I think the difference between the United States and other countries that are now considering rate cuts is that they're just not having the kind of growth we're having. They have their inflation is performing about like ours or maybe a little better, but they're not experiencing the kind of growth we're experiencing. So we actually have the luxury of having strong growth and a strong labor market, very low unemployment, high job creation, and all of that. And we can be patient, and we'll be careful and cautious as we approach the decision to cut rates, whereas I think other jurisdictions may go before that. In terms of the implications, I think obviously markets see it coming. It's priced in now. And so I think the economy, markets and economies can adapt to it. And I think, you know, we haven't seen, in addition for the emerging market economies, we haven't seen the kind of turmoil that was more frequent 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And that's, I think, partly because emerging market countries, many of them have much better monetary policy frameworks, much more credibility on inflation. And so they're navigating this pretty well this time.
But other central banks cannot get too far from the Fed because exchange rates would get even more out of kilter, risking the importation of more inflation. And so to an extent, the Fed's dithering will mean other central banks will also remain on hold for longer. But there are three points to make on all of this. First, central bankers are still not admitting that they caused the inflation breakout in the first place due to their dramatic rate cuts and QE programs, done, of course, in tandem with government providing massive financial support through COVID. This is actually the root cause of the problem. Yet, of course, the US Treasury continues to run a larger deficit, which is costing more because of the higher rates. Second, Powell was explicit in not being influenced by the political context, US elections and all, arguing that the Fed was independent. But we, of course, know some politicians would have a rather different perspective on this issue.
You've talked about your commitment to being apolitical and nonpartisan, and I was just wondering, given that it's an election year, is the bar for rate changes higher close to an election? And similarly, is there a significant economic difference between, you know, starting to cut in, say, September versus December?
So we're always going to do what we think the right thing for the economy is when we come to that consensus view that it's the right thing to do for the economy. That's our record. That's what we do. We're not looking at anything else. You know, it's hard enough to get the economics right here. These are difficult things. And if we were to take on a whole nother set of factors and use that as a new filter, it would reduce the likelihood we'd actually get the economics right. So that's how we think about it around here. And, you know, we're at peace over it. We know that we'll do what we think is the right thing when we think it's the right thing. And we'll all do that. And that's how everybody around here thinks. So I can't say it enough that we just don't go down that road. If you go down that road, where do you stop? And we're not on that road. We're on the road where we're serving all the American people and making our decisions based on the data and how those data affect the outlook and the balance of risks.
And then is there a significant difference between, you know, whether you start in, say, September versus December?
There's a significant difference between an institution that takes into account all sorts of political events and one that doesn't. That's where the significant difference is. And you know, we just don't do that. I mean, you can go back and read the transcripts for every, this is my fourth presidential election here. Read all the transcripts and see if anybody mentions in any way the pending election. It just isn't part of our thinking. It's not what we're hired to do. If we start down that road, I don't know how you stop.
And third, being totally reactive to data means the Fed is looking back, not forward. This may well mean events will catch them out. They have yet to acknowledge that the so-called R star, or neutral rate, is actually significantly higher than they think it is. So the road is wide open to potential policy failure. Meanwhile, many Americans have run down their savings, are putting more on credit, and housing affordability continues to deteriorate for many.
You mentioned consumers, and consumers are feeling the weight of interest rates right now. Mortgage rates are up, as are rates for car loans, credit cards. People looking to borrow are very discouraged. That's reflected in their views on the economy. What would you say to them?
Well, the thing that hurts everybody, and particularly people in the lower income brackets, is inflation. If you're a person who's living paycheck to paycheck and suddenly all the things you buy, the fundamentals of life go up in price, you are in trouble right away. And so with those people in mind in particular, what we're doing is we're using our tools to bring down inflation. It will take some time, but we will succeed and we will bring inflation back down to 2%, and then people won't have to worry about it again. That's what we're doing, and we know that it's painful and inconvenient, but The dividends will be paid will be very large, and everyone will share in those dividends, and we've made quite a lot of progress. If you can think about it, I think headline core PCE peaked at 5.8, now it's at, anyway, headline peaked at 7.1, now it's at 2.7. Don't want to get that wrong.
No, you don't. Quick follow-up. Are current interest rates really doing that much, though, to fight inflation right now for those consumers?
Yes. I mean, I think that restrictive monetary policy is doing what it's supposed to do, and it's also, in this case, unusually working alongside and with the healing of the supply side. This that was different this time was that a big part of the source of the inflation and the reason why we're having this conversation is that we had this supply side kind of collapse with shortages and bottlenecks and all that kind of thing. And so this was to do with the shutting down and reopening of the economy and other things that really raised demand. So many factors did that. So I think now you see those two things working together, the reversal of those supply and demand distortions from the pandemic and the response to it, along with restrictive monetary policy. Those two things are working to bring down inflation, and we've made a lot of progress. Let's remember how far we've come. We have a ways to go. We've got work left to do, but we're not looking at the very high inflation rates that we were seeing 2 years ago.
We sort of beg the question, who is the Fed really working for? Is it for all Americans, as he suggests? I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.